You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Kale and Company weekday mornings 6 till 10.
Tom Hayes will be in for the Kale and Company crew today. Happy New Year's. Happy New Year's. And wow, I hear it's snowing out there. Someone reported in the chat, we already got 2 to 3 inches. Is that in Philly or is that out in the suburbs? Yeah, I saw the snow coming down as soon as I started coming in today. I'm not like one of those. I'm not a big weather guy. You know, I have friends. I actually have a specific friend. I mean, I think weather for some people becomes a hobby. Are you familiar with that, Jim? You have any friends who continuously look at the weather?
There are a few people here and there. Yeah, they're not as crazy as the people on Twister, but.
Yeah, well, they're not. I don't have any. I'm not saying I have storm chaser friends, if that's what you're insinuating. Yeah. I'm just saying I have a friend that I can ask him, you know, what the weather is like at any different time. And he goes back and forth. You know, if I'm in Florida or if I'm up here in Philadelphia, he always knows the weather. I think some people, you know, everyone has their own little thing, you know, that something like it must be a dopamine fix. You know, that like politics is like gives me dopamine. Like if I start reading an article or I'm watching a reel, if it's politics, obviously I'm getting hit with the dopamine. Or if you're watching Eagle highlights.
Absolutely.
You know, you need a little bit of that dopamine.
For me, it's anything electronic. When you talk about vintage stereos or reel-to-reel tape decks or turntables or DJ equipment.
That's your thing.
That's my thing.
Yeah.
That's my thing.
You know,
that's why I do what I do.
Well, you're in that business of tech, you know, all these instruments and technology all around you.
Yeah, when I was a kid, I used to ask my mom for a radio every week. Every week I would be asking my mom for a radio.
And would you take it? You weren't one of those kids that would get it, take it apart and rebuild it?
Absolutely. That's who I was. Well, I would take it apart. Rebuilding it was a different story, but I would take it apart.
Right. Yeah, the challenge was putting it back together.
Exactly.
I always knew better. I knew I was not capable of that. Even though I was in the technology business, I owned a broadband business. It was very technical, but I wasn't. Believe me, I never went to a meeting without an engineer sitting next to me. Because once that how IP packets were going to cross whatever or what the latency was, I was like, oh, let me defer right here.
Exactly.
Yeah. So yeah, but everyone you know has their own little thing. But I don't. I didn't know. I wasn't expecting this weather. I didn't know snow was coming. I had no clue. I just saw someone in the chat says, I'm on my way from Budapest. Wow. My brother was just in Budapest. He said it was fascinating. Now, I want to go to Budapest. I think Budapest is like a new hot spot. Some things get hot for a while. You know what got hot? And I think it's still a pretty hot place to go is Japan. Japan is like has been a huge tourist place. And I actually went, I guess one summer ago or two summer ago, but I wouldn't have gone to Japan. My daughter was studying over there. So we decided to take the whole family. Fascinating place. But some of these places get trendy and I know Budapest is one. Now I want to go there. So let's get, we'll get back into the show. I'm kind of talking about the weather, we're talking about electronics, we're talking about Budapest. You know what I do want to talk about? I saw this. I thought this was interesting. Snap bans on soda, candy, and other foods take effect in 5 states January 1st. And I wonder if that's a Trump thing or you know, the states are doing it themselves. It must be each individual state. So we have Indiana, Iowa, Nebraska, Utah, and West Virginia are the first of at least 18 states to enact waivers prohibiting the purchase of certain foods through the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or what we know as SNAP. And it's been a push by, what do they call the, well, Robert F. Kennedy, the Secretary of Health and Human Services. He's been pushing this. We can't continue a system that forces taxpayers to fund programs that make people sick and then pay a second time to treat the illness those very programs help create. Kennedy said this in a statement in December. And you know what? Wow. Like, you know, common sense. That's one thing the government isn't, common sense. So you give out all these SNAP cards and everyone can become a diabetic because you can buy all the garbage that that they sell. It's just easy pickings. The food's there. They eat it. And then it's kind of like our government. That's why everything government touches is just a disaster. It promotes bad health. It promotes you becoming a diabetic. And if you're on a SNAP card and you're not eating right, then you're going to have to go on Medicaid to pay for all your unhealthy habits. So the government is going to allow you to eat the bad stuff that is going to create a situation where you now need government assistance at a younger age because of, you know, chronic diseases that are caused by eating too much sugar. That sugar is poison. In other administrations, even Republicans for that, they would never even touch the SNAP thing because they'd be too afraid to be, they're saying like, oh, well, most people on SNAP are people of color. And if you're saying they're fat and you can't discriminate against fat people, never mind if they're heavy people of color, any heavy people, you can't say they're heavy and you can't say, you know, fat is, you know, they went through this whole thing that being heavy was beautiful and wow, what a vicious circle that is. When you think of all the money that we spend, it's a vicious circle. Here's your SNAP card. Go buy junk food for the next 10 years. When you're 32 and you get diagnosed with some chronic disease because you ate too much of the food that we gave you for free, we're now going to give you free Medicaid to kind of fight the disease, which we're going to have to fight for the next 40 years. We're going to have to keep you on some pharmaceutical that we're going to have to subsidize for you for the next 40 years. Insanity, to complete insanity. Everything the government touches is insanity. I don't know how you fix it, but that's one way you fix it. You limit what people can buy with the SNAP cards. And, you know, I'll be honest, since I've been up for the holidays, in New Jersey with it being cold and crummy out. I don't know, Jim, if this happens to you, but I find my diet has been blown up.
Just
blown up. And it's not like I'm on a diet. I just eat a certain way. And you get into the holidays, and now that when you're in the warm weather too, you tend to eat less down in Florida. You tend to eat less. You're outside all the time. You can work out, swim, bike. You can do everything all year round. But when I come up here, that you get that hibernating instinct.
Absolutely. Because it's January. It's cold outside. It's dark out at 4 o'clock. It just sucks the life right out of you. And you don't want to cook anything. So you're on the phone like this. Yeah, it's like to place an order for an order of chicken fried rice, some fried wontons. I like that pizza, half pepperoni, half onions, and hold the mayo.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it's psychological too. Like I've been home. I've been here at least 2 weeks. I probably got another week here. And I am just, even going to the gym, like I'm going, but I'm not sweating. No.
It's so tough. Especially.
I'm so upset with myself. But what I keep telling myself is, you know, when I get back down to Florida, man, it starts. I'm going. I'm getting it back. But and the hard thing too is when you go from, like, if I was here all year round, I'm able to do it. You know what I mean? I'm able to stay somewhat focused, but coming back here, I don't know. I get into my house is older here. It's warm. Like the heat really, you know, like you just start lulling your way into some bad habits. And I don't have a SNAP card, by the way. I'm paying my own money to eat very unhealthy.
Yeah, the government
food.
Is not even helping you eat
and
bad.
I'm still doing it. And I'm still doing it.
The worst for me is since I've been doing mornings here for the last year and a half, and every January or December, I wake up at about 4 and I'm like, boy, did I really make the right decision accepting this? Because you don't want to do anything. It just sucks the life right out of you. And I'm walking down Walnut Street at 5 o'clock in the morning, freezing, and it's just end already. I'm one of these people. I just want to go to sleep on January 2nd and wake up on April 3rd. Is that too much to ask?
No, I get it. And I used to deal with all this, what do they call it, the seasonal affect disorder.
Yeah.
But you know what was weird with my seasonal affect disorder? And this is going to be, what do they call it, a public service announcement. I think you know you have seasonal affect disorder when it affects you right when the clocks turn back. Like, believe it or not, it used to hit me in November, and I'd get, like, I remember even as a younger person, I'd always not feel that great in November, December. But then, what is it, the winter solstice where the sun starts coming back in late January 22nd. I think it's like a Hindu celebration somewhere over in India. But then, like, the sun would hit me a certain way in winter. You still have February, March. You still have some crummy months coming. But that's when it was so weird. It was like my body would start changing. I'd start feeling better in January. So I believe that I really had seasonal affect disorder. If you're just not happy in January, February, and March, I just think it's because it's gloomy and crummy out.
Absolutely.
But if it starts right when the clock turns back, I think you could be certified for seasonal affect disorder, and maybe, you know, the government should give you something for that.
Maybe the government should give me something for that, but what'll happen is they'll find out where I work, and they're like, nah, we're going to take even more money out of your paycheck.
They should give you a free flight. They should give you a free flight to a sunny place. That's what the government
would
do.
But it is what you said, though, Tom, because when November starts and it gets dark out at 4:30, it just kills you. And I sit there with my wife and she's like, oh, I'm bored. I'm like, yeah, welcome to winter. Welcome to November. It's going to get even worse in January because the temperatures are going to drop down to below freezing.
Yeah.
And January, and for some reason, Christmas week, when you're doing this radio thing, it just seems like a very slow week. Like, it just drags and drags and drags. And New Year's Eve has always been that way to me. It just seems like you're never going to get there. It just, time just stops.
It does.
No, it just stops.
Even as a kid, it was like that.
Yeah, as a kid, it was like that. And January is going to be even worse because it just seems like the months are just going to go on and on.
Yeah, January,
and on
it's
and
a
on.
It's a long month.
Yeah,
it's
a very long month.
It's a long month. But all right, let's try to trim down and eat healthy. But I'm all for that SNAP thing getting limited. And I think RFK was the great choice. What a difference in, like, you know, like, you never heard the government trying to tell people to get healthy. Like, they had those stupid food groups or whatever. But now, like, guys like RFK, and there's kind of a movement in this country that, like, right in your face, like, listen, you're being poisoned with this crappy food. You got to change your ways. Don't eat this crap. And we got to, it's good advice, and do it with your kids. Try to have them less soda, less of this crap. It's not easy. It's hard. It's always hard to push back against the culture. But at least you have the people at the top pushing the culture in the right way. So I give Robert F. Kennedy a lot of credit for it. Let me tell you, that guy has taken a lot of heat. He's, you know, he was a Democrat. He's a Kennedy. The social circles that he traveled in, I think he's a little nutty too, which I kind of like, because kind of nutty people kind of get things done. And you got to understand his whole world, all his connections and everything. He's like enemy number one to so many people. So many people who used to love him, kiss his butt because he was a Kennedy, wanted to help him, wanted to back him in everything he was doing. Once he came over to the dark side, that's MAGA, man, he, all those friends, all, even his own brothers and sisters, man, they want to put, they're shooting arrows at him. I get why the family did. And I've said this before, so I think as a younger guy, he was so out of control, RFK, cause he had definitely addiction issues, I think, as a younger guy, like pretty serious stuff. And, so I leave his siblings out of this if they're throwing rocks at him, because he probably terrorized them, you know, because when people are on drugs and they're in your family, they terrorize the family. Look at Rob Reiner and his wife are a perfect example. I mean, if you have a kid addicted and, man, that can be brutal. So I kind of get why RFK, because of his behavior as a younger person and his addictions, his siblings might not like him. But all his phony friends who hate him, who didn't really care about any of that stuff, and they didn't live in his family, but they loved him when he was RFK, the lawyer and the environmentalist and all that. Then they loved him. But now he's come on over to Health and Human Services, doing a bang-up job. He's now MAGA. Now he's hated God. He's persona non grata by all the people that love them. What a crazy world we live in. But anyway, let's get, I'm going to start digging into the Minneapolis scandal. But you know, since I got off my time schedule here, I wanted to ask you, Jim, should I take a break now, or should I get into the Somalis? What do you think?
Let's take a break and we'll get into it after on the other side.
I like your plan. Let's go with it.
Here at Blue Apron, we know exactly how hectic school nights can be. That's why we created Assemble and Bake. Delicious one-pan meals that make family dinner simple. Just assemble the pre-chopped ingredients and put the pan in the oven to bake. Then you're free to help out with that last-minute diorama. Shop Assemble and Bake at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and on the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back to 1210 WPHT here in Philadelphia. You can listen on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio, or you can live stream us on YouTube. This New Year's Day in Philadelphia, which I understand is now snowing outside. And we got the Mummers Parade today. And this is Tom Aislabie sitting in for Kale and Company. So, and I am on. I always like to remind you I will be on again tomorrow. And we have the Tom Aislabie Show Saturday, 8 to 9, every Saturday. So you can join me there. So, let's get into Minneapolis, and I know I'm going to try to give you a different angle on this. I'm going to focus in a little bit on Congresswoman Omar's husband. I think he's an interesting cat as far as all this fraud goes, and I'll try to give you a little different, you know, what not you're reading every day in the newspaper, what all the news is talking about. We'll do a little bit of that, but I'm going to get into him. Because I think the way her wealth and his wealth have shot up in the last two or three years is pretty interesting. And I'll say this right now. You say, well, they all get rich this way with the stock market. That's not the case here. So we're going to dig into this. This isn't Nancy Pelosi situation where she got so rich, though her husband, not that I, you know, allegedly, you know, she was feeding her husband information, but he is a big time financier. So he is in the markets. So Pelosi's got a little bit of an alibi. Not that anyone's going to buy it, but she does a little bit of an alibi because her husband is a wealthy man and he was a trader. But who knows? Maybe they only got rich because what Nancy whispered in his ear when they were in pillow talk, as they say. Anyway, this Nick Shirley, this young Mormon from Utah, doing the job that journalists from the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, ABC, NBC, they can't do. But this guy, Nick Shirley, going around knocking on doors of these the new scam out there out in Minneapolis in the Somalian community is these child care centers, and there's no kids in them. And this scam could be up to $100 million. It's still early, but Nick Shirley is now they're coming after him. So CNN and they're all doing hit pieces on him. You know, they're going into protection mode because this fraud goes up to the highest parts of the Democratic Party. Never mind Governor Waltz, who nearly became your vice president, but it also goes up to the Biden administration and Kamala's campaign, because you think that when they do their due diligence, they don't want any of this stuff getting out. So they must, like, there was no way that they could turn a blind eye to all the scandals in Minneapolis. These people go in, they turn over a lot of rocks, and you're telling me they didn't think there was a problem there? And I'll tell you why everyone would have been told there was a problem there is because reporters were getting intimidated not to say anything by the Waltz administration. You think one reporter didn't say, listen, they didn't let us talk about the Somalian fraud that has been going on here with autism and Feed the Kids and everything. Someone would have said something. So someone did say something. That's what I'm saying. And the Kamala, when they were doing their due diligence on Waltz, they probably heard it. They probably just looked the other way. It was too close. They had 107 days or whatever. So they looked away. So now what the media is doing is they're trying to get this 23-year-old Nick Shirley, who's done a bang-up job. They're just trying to kind of ruin his reputation, and it's tough to do. He seems like he's just a normal kid. What are you going to – he's even said it. There's nothing you can get on me. I think he even said I'm a virgin. Like, you can't even get, like, a woman's story on me. I'm a virgin, I don't do drugs, and I don't drink. So good luck trying for CNN to try to take this kid down. Before, you know what? I do have a clip. I think I have a clip about the Maternity Care Coalition. And if you're not ready for it, Jim, we can come back to it, because I don't know if this is legitimate or not. But what's going on right now is there are some organizations in Philadelphia that have received federal funding and state funding. And this is alleged. I'm not saying this. One is the Maternity Care Coalition. I saw one of these civilian investigators going out there and taking a look around. And this is allegedly, I'm not saying they have violated anything in any way. But this is Pandora's box being opened.
Looks like we do have it if you want to play it.
Yeah, let's play it. And I will say, I don't know if this organization has done anything wrong. They could be doing great things in the city of Philadelphia in maternity care. But it's a clip I saw. It's out on the public internet. So let's play that clip.
The Maternity Care Coalition is a nonprofit that got $23 million from the government to run daycares like this. So it is 2 p.m. This place is supposed to be open. It closes at around 4:30. We're going to try and buzz one more time to see if anybody opens up. Looking for childcare. Okay, so nobody's going to open. Okay, another entrance. Gonna knock again. Again, it's 2 p.m., so within operating hours, this place should be open. Okay. Little Frank needs childcare.
All right. Okay, so this is just another, you know, civilian investigator, and it is a holiday week. So let me go in defense of Maternity Care Coalition, who I know absolutely nothing about. Okay. And they could run the greatest program in the city of Philadelphia. They get $23 million. I'm sure it's not all private donations. There's got to be taxpayer donations, but maybe they are doing a good job and they were closed down for the holiday. My bigger point on this, well, first of all, if you ever ran an organization or a company and you see something like this online, what's going on across the, my advice as a crisis counselor, and radio host, I would tell the people at Maternity Care Coalition, get out in front of the microphone really quick. If this is not true and they're misrepresenting what your organization does in Philadelphia, get out in front of this real quick, because if you start to hide, that's going to raise everyone's suspicion. And that's your job. If you are taking public funding, which I believe they are, you do have an obligation when someone starts calling you out on something like this. You have an obligation to the people you're taking care of, to the taxpayers, to get out, make a statement, and tell people exactly what your organization is doing. And if people are being misled about your organization based on what this civilian journalist was doing, I'm assuming he was with not affiliated with any major news network or newspaper. He's just a young guy out doing what Nick Shirley was doing. Then they should get out ahead of it. They should get out ahead of it quick. And I think we're going to see a ton of this now. And thank God for Elon Musk, because no one would have understood the NGOs, that the non-government organizations, and what, how much power and money they had and what they were distributing. Then you learn our whole nonprofits, all these nonprofits, there is so much scandal and ripoff going in nonprofits. There's no doubt about it. There's so many scams out there in nonprofits that we would have never known about it. It became part of the language of our culture now because of Elon and Doge going out there and doing these investigations. At least it's now on the front of everybody's mind. Like, who is this organization? What are they doing with money? Are they getting government money? Like, I never knew Catholic Charities and Lutheran Charities was getting, they're getting millions and millions. I thought Catholics gave to Catholic Charities. I didn't know the federal government was writing them used checks to settle illegal immigrants. And I'm a Catholic, so I'm kind of like, what the heck is going on? I got a whole thing on that too, but I can't go too far off. But anyway, everybody is giving a second look at any of these organizations that are receiving government money, or even private nonprofits who are getting tons of money. What are they doing with the money? Are these nonprofits, because they get a tax break, and as a taxpayer, as a nonprofit, we're letting them off the hook to do good work. But if they're doing good work that's not good for the country, you're getting ripped off. Don't let them be a nonprofit. If they want to be a regular company for profit and do stuff that they have a right to do because it's a very free country that you might think is bad for the country, then that's fine. But if they're a nonprofit, we're giving them a break. And if they're doing something that's not benefiting the country, we should be aware of it. So anyway, I think there's going to be a lot of this corruption getting exposed at some of the most local levels, like from not big national stories like Minneapolis, but it's going to start getting local. You'll see it in Philadelphia. You're going to see it in a county. You'll see it down in Baltimore. This country is riddled with these frauds. And it seems like the press and the major media and they don't care about that. There's no 60 Minutes kicking in doors or taking on this story. And thank God for the internet, and thank God for these journalists. Thank God for X, and thank God for Elon Musk. This kind of all comes back to him. Imagine if Donald Trump did not win the election. We wouldn't know half of the stuff that we know now. And that's why you should be optimistic. Instead of gloom and doom, somebody, oh, no one's going to jail. It's not going our way. All gloom and doom. No, there's good things happening. We are finding out stuff we would have never known if Donald Trump was not elected and Elon Musk bought Twitter. And it just keeps going on and on. It's like it's all good stuff. So we should be optimistic. And this guy is going out checking in on Maternity Care Coalition. Let's find out what they're up to. And if they're legitimate, it'll be easy for them to prove that. Okay. So a lot of this fraud that you're seeing out in Minneapolis comes out of Congresswoman Omar's district. All right. And she's got a very controversial path. How she got into the country. Did she, she has a brother. And I don't know what the deal is, that she had to marry the brother quickly. He was somewhere over in the Middle East, And her father, the time that he wanted to be over there, I guess he was in Dubai, but he was, I don't know, he had a very flamboyant lifestyle. I don't know if it was a sexual thing, but I heard the father was like, we got to get that kid. They're Muslim faith. They're conservative with that type of cultural or sexual thing, that he wanted to get that boy or that young man out of wherever he was over into the United States. So the rumor allegedly is Omar married him because they couldn't go through the same chain migration process. Now, I don't know if that's true or not true, but she's got a dicey past. There's no doubt about that. Another thing about Omar, her father was a colonel in the Marxist dictator's army over there in Somalia. Her grandfather had a huge job in the government, and this was a Marxist regime that broke into civil war. The country's just been run by warlords. But the grandfather was in charge of the maritime ports over in Somalia. And, obviously they were government connected. They were connected to the dictator. And what people in a lot of these countries, specifically Somalia, I think they're number 179 out of 180 corrupt governments in the world. 179 out of 180. And now they've brought some of that culture of stealing from your government. They've brought that to Minneapolis. And you have to understand that in these countries, ripping off off your government is not it's not frowned upon. It's part of the culture. It's the way it's done. Who's ever in power and all their henchmen, like Omar's father and uncles or whatever, they're all ripping off the government. That's what they do. And then the Civil War broke out and they had to run for their lives. And then we spend billions through Catholic charities and Lutheran charities. These people that ripped off their country actually helped start their civil war. Then we spend billions to resettle them in Minneapolis. And how did they all end up in Minneapolis? They ended up in Minneapolis because a few families, like a lot of migrants, a few families showed up in Minneapolis. They were being sent by all these organizations to different crime-ridden cities and crummy neighborhoods. But they got word from some of the original families, and I'm going back to the early 2000s, late 1990s. Come to Minneapolis. This is where the food processing industry is. And you don't have to learn English. You don't have to assimilate. We have you come here. Food processing is really hard, tough, dirty work. It's cutting cows' heads off and slaughtering pigs. And you don't have to learn the language because that's the type of your work you can do. And they were paying a decent wage. Then the other big benefit that the few first families that came there were told all the Somalians that were in crappy neighborhoods in Baltimore or in somewhere in New Mexico, they're like, come here, the welfare here. And Minnesota it's been democratic forever. It has a huge welfare system that it's so easy to get welfare, to get benefits in Minnesota. So anyway, that's a little bit of history for you, how the Somalian community got built up in Minneapolis. Because you would think people from one of the hottest places in the world in Africa would go to one of the coldest places in the country, which is Minneapolis. Why would they do there? Because of easy to work there, don't have to learn the language, and a very generous welfare state. So that's a little background on how they got there. And the government officials, and like I said, even Omar's family, because I'm going to get into Omar's husband and what he was up to. But I want to give you a little bit of history, how this is so common. And it's not just Somalians. This goes on in India, ripping off the government, Pakistan, ripping off the government in a lot of these countries, which was not a culture of the United States. That is not an ingrained culture in American-born people to rip off your government. Not that it doesn't go on, but it's not a day-to-day thing where it's kind of normal. That's what you do when you come from one of these countries. And a lot of these, the Somalians are clan networks here in America, and so they're very well organized, kind of like, you know, you think of like, you know, there's been Irish mobsters, the Websties, the Italian mob in Philadelphia. They're families and they trust each other. And This kind of human condition is common across all different types of people. So it's not exclusive to anyone's skin color, but it is more prevalent in these third world countries in the culture to rip off the government. So anyway, let's get into Omar and her husband. His name is Tim Minette. Now, Tim Minette married Omar. I'm assuming I would assume he's the third husband. And he had a very public divorce because just a few years ago, his wife went public about him cheating with Congresswoman Omar. She went public with it. And he was he's a political guy, meaning he has a political consulting firm with his business partner and they raise money. But their biggest gig was the contract they got with Omar. And I think he made like $2 or $3 million off her campaign when she was running for Congress. Now everyone starts thinking, where was she getting the campaign funds? Was she getting kickbacks from the Somalians running the fake Feed the Children and the daycare centers? We're going to get into a little bit about that. But anyway, this guy's an American. He's actually, Tim is from North Jersey, and I'm just going to refer to him. Tim is Omar's husband. He attended school at the University of Albany. But he was very connected before he got connected to Omar. He's connected with Keith Ellison, who was a congressman from Minneapolis, who is now the attorney general of Minneapolis. He was tied to Louis Farrakhan at one time, but then he denied it. He wasn't part of him, and he is Muslim, but now he's like a Sunni Muslim. But he's an American, an American black Muslim, and now he's kind of taken up the Sunni. I don't want to go through all the different forms of being a Muslim, but that was kind of his thing. He started taking heat because he was associated with black Muslims and Louis Farrakhan. So then he had kind of went to a different division of the Muslim religion. And I think it's Sunni, which a lot of Saudis, I believe, are. But anyway, he is now the attorney general of Minneapolis. He was a congressman. Now he's the attorney general. So this is a guy that that you would hope your state attorney general would have been keeping an eye out on all this federal and state money. But there's clips of him defending it when rumors started to come out it was happening. He started defending it, saying like, this sounds like you're going after small businesses. They're Somalians. They're Muslims. It's traditional American racism. And he's heard on tape making a couple of these speeches. But him and Tim Walz and their administration, Keith Ellison as the attorney general of the state, they did back reporters off, and they weaponized that whole thing. Like, you're coming after people because of their race and their skin color and their religion. And they basically have them on tape saying this. And everyone has to know this statistic, and I've said it on other shows. They have 2,200 people in health and human services in the Minnesota state. In that department, there's a health and human services in the state of Minnesota. There's 2,200 employees. Over 400 were whistleblowers. Think about that. 400 whistleblowers in a department, and they were all pretty much told to be quiet. Whistleblowers, I thought, are like maybe you have a giant department and there's two or three guys that want to come out and tell you the dirt, what's going on. They had over 400. That tells you how well known this scandal was. And it also tells you that there was no way Kamala Harris and her campaign of professionals coming in with $1 billion, they didn't hear or do the due diligence to find there was a problem there. But I don't get it. But that's going to be exposed soon, I'm sure. But anyway, let's get back to Omar's husband, Tim. Okay, so he raises about $3 million for Omar, and Tim is about 44. Omar is 43. Let me tell you, she looks really young for being 43 years old. She looks very young. She's an attractive young woman, but she's 43. I never knew that. I always thought she was like in her early 30s. So when Tim was working at the time, his I don't know what you would call him. He's married. It's his girlfriend. It's his mistress or whatever. They're having this little thing going again, going with each other. But they had FEC complaints that they were using campaign money and funds for illegal travel and for date nights. So that's not something I'm reporting as new. That came up back in her campaign, back in like, you know, in the 2000, in early 2000, well, 2020 or 2021, that their little romance going together, there were, federal election, charges or complaints brought up against them that they were using the money personally. I think we're going to go to break. And when we come back, I'm going to go a little bit deeper into Tim Omar's husband, the congresswoman, and then we're going to tie it all back to the big scandal in Minneapolis. So we'll go to break, and we'll be right back.
Maybe you like cooking. Maybe you don't. Either way, the new Blue Apron is for you. Because along with our classic meal kits, we're offering new pre-made and one-pan meals to help you get dinner on the table fast. And now there's no subscription needed, so you can just order and enjoy. Do delicious food your way. Shop 100-plus meals at blueapron.com. Get 50% off your first two orders with code APRON50. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
It's Kale and Company on demand from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Welcome back to 1210 WPHT. This is Tom Aislebe in for Kale and Company on this New Year's Day. We're getting into the Minneapolis thing. It's the talk of the town, as they say, or it's the talk of the country. What a giant ripoff. I'm going to give you some numbers in a little bit, but I was talking about Tim Minette. He's married to Congresswoman Omar, had a very public breakout up with his first wife when he started working with Congresswoman Omar. His wife went public that he was having an affair with the congresswoman. Hey, listen, that stuff happens in life. I don't really care about that. What I do care about is if Tim Minette, who is Omar's husband, was involved in some shady business deals, because Omar's district is ground zero for all this corruption. It is literally ground zero for all the fraud coming out of the Somalian community with this you know, feeding the kids, the autism. Now they got the whole Medicaid fraud thing going there, and that they are giant numbers. We'll do the numbers in a little while. So anyway, Minette was her political consultant, and he has a business partner, and I'll get to him, but I want to just focus on Tim Minette in the beginning here. And he is not Somalian. He's you know, he went to college in New York State or something. He grew up in North Jersey. And all this is allegedly. I don't have any confirmed evidence of what I'm going to talk about. So it is alleged. It is alleged. But I found this interesting. After her campaign, which raised, and I don't know what the average congressional campaign raises, but Omar did pretty well. She had raised a few million bucks. And he would then, he would have a consulting company, a political consulting company. But then in 2021, he opens up a winery that he gets into the wine business. And I mean, as a it doesn't seem like he was a wealthy man before he started working with Omar, or the fact that he would even get into the wine business. But that's what he does. Him and his political consultant business partner, who doesn't really have much of an online profile. I'm not saying anything about that. I just couldn't find a lot of information about him, but he's been a Washington kind of political hanger on guy. But I don't think you make that type of money unless there's the big guys that you see on or pollsters on CNN or whatever. But getting into the wine business, that's a rich guy's business. That's, you know, celebrity business, or sometimes it's not even rich people in the winery business. It's families in the winery business who have been in it for decades, and their grandfather owned the winery. So that's the winery business. So here's this guy, Minette, Tim Minette, her husband, opens up a wine business, and all of a sudden it lasts about a year or two, and they hire a woman called Erica Stancliffe, who's just like a lot of these wine businesses. You hire a winemaker as like as a contractor or whatever. But what she said, and she's been interviewed, there was no warnings. There were no discussions. The business was not doing well. They just stopped talking to her. They stopped sending her checks. She said she kind of kept the work going for them, thinking like, hey, maybe they would come back, or I don't know what she thought. She was probably wishful thinking. But anyway, it sounds like she got screwed out of some money, and they stopped paying her. And all of a sudden, this high-flying and all the bravado, but which entrepreneurs have to do to get people excited about what they're doing, it all went to pot. Nothing. It didn't go to pot. The wine didn't go to pot, meaning it all disappeared. They even stopped calling her. And let me tell you something. That just shows you they're not legitimate business people. When businesses go bad, if you ever want to have another business and you want to maintain relationships, you go out and explain to people who either work for you or vendors, like, all right, this is what happened. It didn't go bad. This is what we're going to do. This is how we need to settle. Or you go to court to do it. These two guys, their wine business collapsed, and they didn't pay anyone. Anyway, they spoke about how well it was doing, but their bank accounts had very little money in them, and they might have done $200,000 in sales overall over a couple of years or something. So they weren't lighting the world on fire, and the thing went out of business. It's just a weird business to get into. So I'm a little confused on why he got into that business. Whatever they put into the business, they lost, and they didn't have much sales. But this is where it gets interesting. The next thing he does, here are two political consulting guys. They decide to open up a private equity firm, you know, just like that. They haven't worked on Wall Street. They're political guys that raise money for campaigns, but now they open their own private equity firm. And when these guys are in their 40s, I think his partner was in his 50s, they have no background in finance. Okay. So at that age, to get into the private equity business, to me, is very, very suspicious when you don't have any background. Maybe, you know, when you get into a business, I got into a couple of businesses, I didn't really know much about them, but I was so young, I had time to learn about them, and I didn't have a wife and kids at home. But these guys are in their 40s and 50s. Getting into very complicated business, the private equity business, that's a very, very complicated business. If you ever dealt with private equity, there's a lot to it. It really stinks, you know, what private equity does to companies, because that's another whole discussion. I've seen that happen over and over again with entrepreneurs selling to private equity. It's such a headache. But so anyway, So her and her husband, Tim, filed a congressional financial disclosure. And these things, are not exact science, because they don't send a bunch of accountants to the congressperson's house to audit it, but they take enough information and they give a range. And sometimes the range is way too big. But they said on this one, in 2024, Omar's congressional financial disclosure. Now, before this, when she was running, her first disclosure a couple of years earlier, or a few years earlier, she was in debt, like $62,000, allegedly. Like she had no net worth. She had a negative net worth. So now, here you are a few years later with her husband, who's now started, has had a failed winery, now starts a private equity firm, not with a private equity guy, where he might be going out and made connections, going to raise money for the private equity. It's with his other partner who was in the political game. So two guys who I believe know absolutely nothing about finance, acquisitions. They don't know anything. Who knows if they could even read a balance sheet. But all of a sudden, their net worth in this financial disclosure is $6 to $30 million. That's highly, highly unusual. $6 to $30 million. So let's even take the low number of $6 million. That's still a lot of money. $6 million. Say if they owned a house worth $750,000 or $800,000, and then you got to assume it's all paid off in their 40s, like the, you know, because you got to minus what the mortgage is. But this is a big number. $6 to $30 million. Even when they did an earlier 2023 financial disclosure, They said they were worth $1 million to $5 million, and they stated that the winery was a big part of that asset. Now, we know at that time when they gave this 2023, that winery wasn't making any money. Their sales were 200,000 over a few years. So her husband has a very suspicious financial background, you know, $6 to $30 million. And this is what's weird about the private equity firm. There's no record of any major deals, no major investors, and there's no evidence of revenue, even though they had a website and the website was bragging that they were in multiple countries across the globe. And anyone can say whatever they want in a private company on a website. But there's no real tracking of anyone they were doing business with and raising money. Now, what we've seen recently as of December, 2025, they're now scrubbing their website of all the people that were supposedly associated, with this private equity firm. And the scrubbing of the website occurred when the Somalian scandal started to break. That's when they started scrubbing the website. And some of the people on it were former Democratic Senator Max Baucus. He's from Montana. Well-known, big-time senator, was chair of the Senate Finance Committee. He was once the ambassador to China. Now he's on their like board of directors. Well, that guy's name has been removed from the website ever since things start crumbling in Minneapolis. I also understand there were other Obama people. Maybe we don't know them, but tied in Obama people also had their name scrubbed from their association with Omar's private equity business. So I think we're going to go to break right now. And when we come back, I'm going to kind of just, and this is just what I think might have happened with this private equity firm, where this $6 to $30 million kind of congressional financial disclosure that Omar and Tim did, where this money might have come from, if they have it, and they might have the money. I just want to explain to you where it might have come from. So we're going to hit that when we get back from the break.
Start your day with Kale and Company, weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.